Coming to you from the Deep South, this is the Blue Collar Leadership Podcast. High impact leadership is not reserved for leaders, and it has nothing to do with your position, title, or rank. However, it does have everything to do with your character. It's time to climb to the next level and beyond, personally and professionally. Now, let's start making it happen with your host, Max Story.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Blue Collar Leadership Podcast today. So today I got a special guest, somebody I think a lot of. Hadn't known him a long time, but I've known him long enough to know I like him. And it's Adam Hoots, Hoots on the Ground, the Lean Builder podcast host, and all kind of other things coming to you today from Auburn, Alabama, my old hometown for 20 years, but he's from South Carolina. He can tell you more about that up at Clemson. So welcome to the show, Adam.
Thank you, Mac. I appreciate it. Super excited to be here in virtual land with you in your hometown, which I learned earlier today. I'm grateful and humbled to be on your podcast here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. And before we dive into what you're doing in Auburn and what you're doing in life and where you come from, where you're going, all that sort of stuff, I just like to always like to start out these episodes with how do we even know each other? How did that come to be? Or tell me about that a little bit.
Yeah, I would love to. So good buddy of both of ours, Mr. LR, Leandrus Whedon, had mentioned your name to me. And of course, I went out there on LinkedIn and started doing some research because that's what I do now, don't you know? And man, I was blown away by your content, your books. I immediately watched, it's one of your leadership books. You got like this, the 30 clips out there on YouTube. And I went out there and went through all of them, man. I was just blown away. I reached out to you. I wanted you on our podcast so bad. And you gratefully accepted that invitation. And after that, man, I've continued to follow you. And even you blessed my wife and I. You and Rhea were traveling up to Charlotte a month or so later. And y'all came up and had lunch with us. Little did I know I took you to a barbecue place, which probably wasn't the best for your eating habits.
It's good for me.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, you've gracefully just invested in me, whether you know that or not, over the last probably 4 or 5 months now. And man, I'm just a huge fan of what you're doing and you know, just honored to be here with you. And thank you. Again, thank you for having me here.
That's awesome, man. And I really enjoyed that episode. And I know you're in Auburn. When you actually going home from Auburn?
Tonight. Not soon enough. I got a presentation over here at this conference today at 2 o'clock on trust in the construction industry. And then after that, it'll end at about 2:30, 2:45. I tipped that valet man so good. He put my truck right at the front. I'm going to toss stuff in there. I got to get home, my man. I got to get home.
Okay. So that's awesome. Yeah. And I really appreciate when you reached out and I appreciate you being on the show because this Real People Getting Real Results series is about people like you helping me help people. And I mean, that's what we're all trying to do. There's no competition. There's room for all of us. Our world needs all the help it can get from every angle and there's no competition. I mean, that's why I'm really appreciate you being here. But that podcast we did, it was pretty powerful for you. I remember you talking about you got into it. It was the lean builder. We're supposed to talk about lean. And in a way, we kind of didn't, but we kind of did, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I got a little vulnerable on the podcast, right? I kind of opened up to you. I think you have this natural knack about you that people just want to be themselves and open up. And you're able to share those type of stories and, you know, create these safe environments where we feel comfortable talking to you, man, who knows what we're going to vomit out of the mouth.
we don't know. So what part of your story you want to share, man? Where you want to start? Where you want to go? You want to start on the front end, go backwards, or the back end, go forward, or jump around?
Man, I'm open to wherever we want to take this thing. I guess I'll start with this. I am a blue collar worker, right? I have been, I will always be. I will never forget being 17 years old in some pretty nasty ditches that my father thought it would be really, really funny to toss me in. And little did I know how well that was going to prepare me for a career in construction, but more importantly, just how to be a man, how to be a husband, a father, and just live a life that is real, honest, transparent, and giving, right? Like, I think that's, if I want to be known for anything, it's about my service to others and just giving, making other people better. Very similar to the lines that you're talking about. When you dropped those words, character development, on me a few months back, that has stuck in my mind nonstop. I mean, you define leadership as character development. And you know, I had a kidney transplant back in September on Labor Day, nonetheless, which is a very special day to us. And ever since then, I've been on this kind of trying to define who I am, right? Like, who am I really? And I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of myself. When I really pull back the mirror or pull back the curtains and look in the mirror, I got work to do. And I think if we look at ourselves in full honesty and transparency, I think we all have a lot of work to do. And so I'm, again, just grateful to have met you, and you have kind of sparked this journey of, you know, you've mentioned some of your childhood and growing up, and you've given me a lot of that information. And I turn around and look at my own childhood, and I'm not happy with where it is, and I'm still not happy with what I've done about it. And so there's been a lot of acceptance. You mentioned the word grace, given myself grace to just be me, right? And in that discovery, right, I've realized that, hey, at 12 years old, I kind of put this barrier block up against my father. And I've been known as Hoots ever since then, because that's basically what he just referred to me as. And so, as I mentioned, the last 6 months, I've been really discovering who this Adam person is. And I like him a lot more than I like Hoots. Unfortunately, most of the construction industry, as they do with most people, call me Hoots, my last name. So I roll with it, but just know they're talking to Adam and not always Hoots.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome, Adam. And you know, to begin with, and I still ain't 100% sure, but the name of your podcast is the Lean Builder Podcast, right?
Yeah. So the two folks wrote a book called The Lean Builder. And so we've taken that book and we've created a podcast. And so the actual kind of full title of the podcast is called The Lean Builder, Hoots on the Ground with No Bullshito. And, you know, bullshito comes from martial arts. When you practice and perform one martial art, and then you take pieces and parts of a bunch of other ones and make your own martial art, which happens a lot here in the United States, folks start to refer to that as bullshito. And so very much similar to lean practices where, hey, it's rooted in respect for people, vulnerability, transparency. And yes, there is a little bit of, hey, let's make things more efficient by getting rid of waste because we care about people. And so I find very often lean folks, call them lean consultants, whatever you want to call them, they spend a lot of time focused on the tools and often forget that they're using those tools to benefit the people, right? They care about the people so much that they want to make their work easier. And so that is often forgotten. And that's why we've tossed in that bullshito title and trying to keep it more, again, just focused on the respect, like true respect and care for people.
Yeah, that's good stuff. The reason I was asking was because when I first saw that, I thought Hoots on the Ground was actually the name of the podcast, but it's part of the name of the podcast. So that's awesome, man. And let's jump back to a second ago, though. You were talking about the, you know, what stood out when you said, you know, I do say leadership development equals character development, but why did that resonate with you? Like, I know there's a lot of things people haven't heard before. I mean, I learned, you know, as I was learning and growing, I heard all and learned all these things I ain't ever thought about. So that was something, I mean, obviously you've thought about character and character development, but you just hadn't connected the two to being the same thing or seeing it that way or what? Tell me about that.
Yeah, I guess I've always defined leadership as kind of an outward expression of who you are, you know, who's following you, how am I treating other people? And not often did I look internally to say, well, who am I, right? And why are people wanting to follow me? And so when you defined it as character development, I kind of, it caught me by surprise, and I paused for a second and was like, man, what kind of character do I have, right? What kind of character am I? And fully, like full life, not just at work, but at home as well. And I found, and there still is a little bit of a disconnect, right? There's things that I'm able to do at work to where I gain followers, versus when I'm at home, you know, those people kind of have to follow me. At least up until now, I've got twin girls that are almost 17, and
oh yeah,
I can sense a little bit of rebellion in them. And so really that even made me dig a little bit deeper to say, well, who am I, right? And why is there rebellion there? And so I think it's a brilliant way to define leadership development, to where it forces you to look internal, because that like leadership, it's nothing that you're doing out externally, right? It's all from inside. And I love the analogy, you've probably heard this before, but you know, when you squeeze an orange, right, you get orange juice out every time. And but when the world squeezes you, right, what comes out of you? And that tells you what's inside. So every time I hear that word character development, I think of myself squeezing an orange, or squeezing myself and figuring out like what comes out of me in those moments where I'm under pressure.
Absolutely. And Andy Stanley always says, you know, a character test is always a pop quiz.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can't prepare for something like that. I mean,
you're either going to have it or not have it, because of the work you've done or not done, right? Who we are is who we are. That's his, you know, I interpret what you said about squeezing the orange. Rhea always says squeeze a lemon. It's the same thing, though. When you get squeezed, who you are comes out.
That's right.
You can't hit the pause button if you ain't capable of hitting the pause button.
That's right. That's another valuable lesson I took from you, right? Between stimulus and response. And I know we got to credit that back to Stephen Covey, but we have a choice there. And are we going to choose to be above or below the line in our response? That's another thing that's really, really stuck with me from our conversations.
That's good stuff, man. I really appreciate that, and appreciate who you are. So I saw your post this morning where you already spoken once at Auburn today?
I have. Well, it was 2 days ago. Yes, sir.
Oh, 2 days ago. Okay. Right. I didn't see the date. I don't know if you shared it today or 2 days ago. I don't always pay attention.
Yeah, it was today. You're right. I'm just trying to get around to it all. You know how that goes.
I know. I do know how it is. There's a lot of stuff to put out there, but that's awesome. So that post, though, said you were an old plumber.
That's right.
They let old plumbers speak at Auburn University?
Well, don't tell many people this, because you're going to get me kicked out of my – you're going to have them take my blue collar off here. But so I'm at an event. It's called the Association of Schools in Construction. And so I am – this old plumber has found my way through a bachelor's degree, and I'm a couple months from getting a master's degree at Clemson University, the other Tigers back east a little bit. And so they asked me, I'm considering doing a PhD and going and getting my doctorate degree in construction science and management. And so I presented at a doctoral forum, is what they called it, where I took my dissertation idea, which is the trust circle. It's a way to measure trust on job sites, which I think is paramount to developing teams. And so I was able to present that to a bunch of doctoral students. And let me tell you, I have presented many topics to hundreds and thousands of people, and I have never been as nervous as I was in front of those 50 doctors as I was presenting this idea. And then they had the ability to kind of, I won't say rip it apart, but to investigate it and help me to be able to prove those things. And so I did that, got it done. And I'll tell you what, they were so supportive. And this has never been done throughout the history of the world. Nobody has ever studied how can you measure trust on a construction job site. So I got really, really great feedback from the folks, and a lot of encouragement to kind of take that idea a little bit further. So I'm excited to do that. And then I also this old plumber got a paper accepted for the conference. And so they're going to put together a little journal, and it'll be sent out here in the next few months. But it was an 8-page paper, which, again, that's a lot of pages for this plumber. I should say plumber's helper. I don't want to disrespect any true plumbers that have been through the apprenticeship. I was only a helper. I was the go-do, right? The gopher. But yeah, we get to talk about another paper here at 2 o'clock. We're going to be talking about how trust impacts performance in the field. And so I'm just, and I'll tell you, it's going to be fun, because every other paper has been, you know, doctorate students up there, like, let me tell you about the, you know, this topic and that topic. And ours is going to be starting out that way. But then I'm going to kick my shoes off. I'm going to put my big muddy boots on, my vest, my hard hat.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're going to get them up and moving. And it's going to be different than what they've seen the last couple of days presentation wise. And I am excited. Let me tell you.
I like it, man. I can tell you are. You fired up for that one.
Yes, I am. I love doing things different, Mac. I really, really do.
Yeah, man. Maybe this interview will pump you up and give you a little extra boost, too. Just, you know, talking about all this stuff before you go talk about all that stuff. So maybe. I know I always like that. Like if I'm doing something like this and then I got to go do something for real, I like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Used to be charged up. You know, you said something there, talking a little bit about your journey of growth from the plumber's assistant up to what you're doing now and getting those degrees. And in that little book right there, Blue Collar Leadership, Leading from the Front Lines, I end that book talking about you got to develop yourself. You gotta believe in yourself. You gotta bet on yourself. And that's what you've been doing. And I always say, and you've already said it here, and I always make sure people don't miss it, especially after you shared who you are and what you're doing right now. And it's for applies to me too. I'm gonna always be a blue collar guy. You see me speaking at Yale University in a suit. That's a Halloween costume, right? We did that, and it was in October, and I told them, I grabbed my tie and I pulled it out and I said, hey, first, y'all got to know this is a costume. I wore it for y'all up here. I dressed up as a white collar executive today, but that ain't who I am. And that's the thing I talk about. No matter what level somebody gets, if you truly a blue collar person, it don't matter what job you got, you're going to always be blue collar. It's a mindset kind of thing. And, you know, and I'll ask you this, cause you can help me out right here. I've had people reach out to me on LinkedIn and want to know, and you know, these are not blue collar people asking me what I'm about to tell you. And I ain't got nothing against the white collar folks, but I got something against what they ask me sometimes, but that's blue collar or white collar. But what they asked me is, somebody said, why are you labeling these people? Why are you labeling these people blue collar? And I just replied back and I said, well, first of all, I am one of these people. And me and the people that I know who are blue collar people, we don't see it as a label to be ashamed of. We see it as a title to be proud of. And I just like your take on, is it a negative label? The blue collar people, we don't see it as a negative label, I don't think. But what's your take?
I don't see it negative as well. I see it as, hey, we get things done, right? Like we're out there, our work is tangible. I tell you, I was just walking back over here again to the library, which I probably stand out like a sore thumb and people walking by me, but
I appreciate it, man.
But there's a gentleman and he was erecting a fence at a construction site. And I saw one of these things, right? And he was like, he had two of them together. I'd never seen it before. And I was like, hey man, what is that? And he's like, oh, it's a fence tie. I sat there for about 5 minutes and he showed me how they go together and how he tied. And I've always tied my fences together with the rebar ties, right? The wire ties. I'd never really seen one like that, but I could, and the more that I look at it. And then I was like, oh, can I have one of those? And he handed it to me. And, you know, I didn't call him a blue collar worker, right? I think it's a lot in the way we engage with people, right? And we talked about this on the other podcast. I think you mentioned it, like, blue collar people know if you're blue collar based on how you interact, how you talk to them. Like, I don't even know if we need to identify or call them anything. Right? People just, they know, they feel. And if you're trying to be faux with it, they're going to pick up on that real, real fast. If you're just, you know, So I don't see it as a negative thing. I think people of the blue collar type have this pride about them that, yeah, my hands, they're calloused, right? They're maybe a little dirty. I got to wash them before I eat something. I think there's this pride that's associated with having a blue collar. However, I think if you're not that kind of person, I do think that it could be interpreted as a little bit negative, because I feel like the more and more I hang out, well, let me put it this way. I feel like the perspective from a white collar is like, maybe, hey, they do dirty jobs and they probably don't make as much money as I do, which, you know, they might have do some dirty jobs, but let me tell you, the truck's probably nicer than yours.
They make some dollars.
Yeah, they do, but they also work hard for them too. And you know, they donate their bodies. You know, they're a resource that is diminishing by the day. And I think, you know, that's one of the things I stand up and I preach all the time. Every chance I get to mention that is, yeah, you know, they are people, but they're also resources, right? And they're an expiring resource. If you're 60 years old and a blue collar worker, I guarantee you your knee hurts or your back hurts or your elbow hurts or something along those lines, because you've been using it so much. And, you know, so I do think that if you're not a blue collar worker, I think then you might be able to see a little bit of a negative connotation to that label, if you will. But I think blue collar to blue collar, we're proud of that.
Yeah, it's a title. That's why it's the name of my business. I've had people say, you need to change that. No, I don't need to change it. Maybe you need to quit worrying about it, but I don't need to change it.
Well, think about it. If you're in an emergency at your house and your toilet's overflowing with water, who are you going to call? You ain't calling a doctor or a lawyer or a white collar folk. You're calling one of us, maybe even this plumber's helper.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because we had that issue several years ago, and I thought, we live kind of out in the country, I thought the septic tank was full. I mean, I had heard the toilet bubbling a couple times, and I didn't, you know, I ain't a plumber, so I was like, something ain't right about this toilet. But I should have called him then, but it took a couple days, and once it started overflowing into the floor from the ring underneath the toilet, somewhere it started over, might have been over to the top, I can't even remember now, but that's the first thing I did was call those septic tank folks. And you know, it was just awesome. First guy come out with a truck and just a little tiny, you know, tract hoe to just find the septic tank for the crew. That was all his job was that. He went out and found it real quick. And he, got to the corner of it and got to where the inlet went into the septic tank. And there was a big root from some big oak trees out in the yard that had grown. It wasn't full. He pulled up the lid and it wasn't full. It was just those roots were blocking the line. They had grown kind of between the inlet and inside, you know, were just blocking the inlet. So he went and got a big bar with a chisel looking tip on it and chiseled out that root and all that stuff. And he said, man, you don't have to have these folks come out. You don't have that problem. You know, he's just a nice guy. And I said, no, we done called you now. You done been it. You know, we're going to go ahead and do it anyway, like preventive maintenance type stuff. Yeah. But he's just trying to help me out. Good guy. And I gave him like a $20 tip. And then the guys come out and, you know, that's for real dirty work.
Yeah. Well, you made me think of something here. A couple of things. One, doctors can't heal people without a blue collar worker head coming first, right? Judges can't instill justice. Teachers can't teach people without a blue collar worker having done their work. And the other thing you just made me think of is, you know, I wonder if they call it blue collar because, you know what, we get a little bit dirty around the neck. You can't see the dirt as well if our collar's blue versus if you're a white collar person and, you know, you're eating a little lunch or something, you spill something on there, you're going to see that for days and days. So we blend in a little bit better, huh? What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right. But that's true. I mean, I write about that sometimes, talk about it. Every single thing physically that there is, blue collar people built it. I mean, white collar folks might have thought about it, but it happened. You know, it's teamwork. I ain't got nothing against the white collar folks. Amen. We need those people who value those jobs to do those jobs. That's just not my target audience. There's plenty of people out helping those folks. I mean, they've been doing it forever, especially the executives. And that's what I did, was take that executive type development content and wrap my blue collar stories around it. And I'm teaching the stuff, the big dogs, the high level, C-level people are getting taught, teaching it to everybody in the blue collar space. But you know, man, those two guys, when they come out to actually pump the septic tank and clean it out, I went out and stood with them right there while they were doing it. I didn't like think they're doing dirty work or whatever. I mean, I wanted them to know I valued them as people. I talked to them, pumped them up, do what I do, and shook their hand. They didn't have to wash their hands. I was just shaking their hands. And I went out and gave both of them a $20 tip, both of them. And I called the company and said, hey, you got some good folks out there representing you and your company. I don't know if you know it, but I know it, you know, and kind of pumped them up. And I wouldn't have did it if they didn't deserve it. But they were, that was truly who they were. So yeah, man, that we built everything, the blue collar people, everything you ride in, drive in, drive on, live in, cooked your food, the food itself. I mean, how you get it, haul it, the buildings, everything. And
despite not getting a thank you or so y'all are welcome. How's that sound? And I love your comment. Nothing against white collar folks. We love y'all too, right? But it is a team to make it all happen, to make the world go around.
Yeah, because there's a ton of blue collar folks. They don't want nothing to do with the office. A lot of folks in the office think that the blue collar folks want to be in the office. Most of them don't want to be in the office. They want to be in the field or they want to be, you know, under the car, in the car, under the hood, wherever it is, whatever they're doing. But that's awesome, man. So what's the most important character type principle you've learned in your life that just resonates, that you got to stick out? It don't matter if it comes from me or somebody else. It's just what you got to dump on us today.
Yeah, it's listening. It's taking the world in before you try to change it, right? Like, I think Stephen Covey said, seek to understand before to be understood. And man, that's been a quality of mine that I've been developing quite a bit over the last 5 years or so, I would say, of how to ask well-designed questions, how to ask more open-ended questions to inspire thought among people instead of trying to just give answers and dictate the way things should be. I'm on this path to help folks self-discover answers, right? Because when we are dictating or giving answers to people, oftentimes we're building dependency on ourselves. And if we're trying to pass that leadership title to everybody that we come into or come into existence with, we want to really encourage them to think critically. We want them to come up with solutions, because you know what? Our answer might not be the right answer or the only answer. And so the more opinions and perspectives that we can bring into a situation, the better off we're going to be. And to be even more specific, I've realized that, hey, when I ask that first question, that if I'm really, truly in the moment, engaged and listening to the person's response without the next question brewed up already, I'm going to be able to find the next question within their comments, within their dialogue. And then what happens is it allows that person to go just a little bit deeper. I got a good buddy, Jesse Hernandez, who you should consider having on here too. He's a real person getting real results for okay. Sure. In fact, he's taught me a little bit of this. He calls it emotional bungee jumping. That makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable. So I call it leadership via transparency. Okay. But the basic premise is, you know, asking open-ended questions, staying engaged in the moment, listening to the response, and then finding that next question within the response. And that helps folks go from what we call water skiing on the surface level to scuba diving, right? To getting down, because most people are just going to answer your question with enough words to get you to go away. But if you're engaged in the moment, you're going to find that next question. You ain't going away. You're going to make them dive and get a little bit more vulnerable. And then they might be swimming And then you're going to ask them another question, and they're going to go underwater, and they're going to fully reveal what the actual problem or thing that's on their mind is. And so it's that, really, listening, being okay with a little bit of awkward silence while I think about the next question, while the answer is processing in my head. And yeah, that's it. Like, that to me is, has been the biggest accelerator in my personal character development, is listening to what people are saying and not having that next question lined up, but just staying in the moment and being engaged enough to let the conversation go wherever it might go. Kind of like what we're doing here right now.
Yep. Yeah. And that's why I like, you know, I like being on your show, and I like doing my show this way. Is authentic. There ain't nothing scripted about it. We don't know what we're going to say or not say or that sort of stuff. So just real quick for my listeners, I forgot to mention it at the start, but if you're listening on the Blue Collar Leadership Podcast, this is in the video format on the Blue Collar Leadership YouTube channel. And there's quite a few episodes already. I hope you go check those out and share them with people. Folks like Adam out here helping me help you. And then these folks I'm having on, they're getting real results. That's why it's called Real People Getting Real Results. And they're from all different kind of industries, all kind of walks of life, just sharing who they are and what they're doing with personal growth and development relative to character and competency. But I want to take you back. You talk about asking those questions and feeding back on what you were saying, and seek first to understand, then be understood is a highly valuable principle. You're talking about your teenage daughters, and that principle is what allowed me to rebuild that relationship with my son, the one who hated me. The only child I got is hated me, Eric. He hated me from age 15 to 19, but I discovered this stuff when he was 17. I started working on me every day for those, you know, 2 years till he got to be 19, and he gave me that another chance. But I'm just curious, Adam, did you happen to have you ever read my book, Defining Influence?
I'm about halfway through it right now. Yes, sir. Okay. I got it on the Audible version.
Okay. So in there, I talk about a lot of my personal parenting, getting it wrong all the time, terribly wrong. So there's a lot of stories in there about ways that I treated him as a teenager, because I thought I was his mother. Previous marriage, she used to always say, he's not a little Marine. He's not at boot camp. And but I treat him like he is, and probably treat her like she was too, which is why that didn't work out. You know, Rhea and I've been together 24 years, but what you're talking about with your daughters is so important for you to do what it is you're wanting to do, because they need you in their life and much as possible. And if we get it wrong as parents, a lot of times by the time it shows up, we start to understand they don't have to follow us anymore. They quit following us. So kudos to you for diving into this. Who knows where that relationship's going to go or not go, but you got to do this for it to get better, no matter what level it's at now.
Yeah, I just want to clarify, thing. This is still a huge work in process. And now I might not have the Marine background, but I have that construction background. And for the first 10 years of my career, I was very traditional, right? Throw your hard hat, screaming, yelling, get it done, I'll back charge you, yada, yada, yada. And I do think I brought a lot of that home, and probably still have a lot of that going on in the house. And I'm working on it. What's awesome is when it happens, I recognize it in the moment. And my wife and I have even talked about some, you know, her calling it out. And when she calls it out, it really de-escalates the entire situation. So we've made progress, but we ain't there yet. We're still tracking up the mountain. We're going to keep on climbing, as you like to say.
Yeah, we got to keep climbing. And it's important, because like my relationship with my son, it never going to be what it would have been if I had known this stuff his entire life, you know, from the time he was born. If I could have been the parent I should have been, the leader of the home that I should have been. I got it all wrong. For the first 17 years of his life, I got it wrong. Didn't even have a clue that I got it wrong. And then in 2 years, I was able to rebuild that relationship, but not back to the point where it was, like you're talking about trust, you know, at Auburn. And when you lose trust, sometimes you lose it and it's all gone. Sometimes you can get it back, but you've probably seen that example where you take a clean sheet of paper and use that example of this. This is trust before you screw it up, and then you can ball it up in a ball and you can get it back, flatten it out. You can iron it. You can do all that, but it ain't never going to be like it was before you did some damage to it. So that's, you on the right track, man. And whatever it is, they need you to keep growing and going. But the number one thing you and I have to remember and help other people understand is what we got to do. I mean, you still got a good relationship, sounds like, to some degree, at some level with your daughter. So that's great. But I had lost mine basically completely. But part of my passion is to help other people who have young kids don't get in the situation with their teenagers that I got in. We got to be that model, that example. Sometimes we can't fix everything in our life like we wish we could if we would have known it, but we can inspire other people, take that pain from our life and turn it into value in somebody else's life.
Yeah, I've heard said you can lose trust in buckets, but you get it back in droplets. And that was really powerful for me. And I think that's one of the reasons that principle, that seek to understand before being understood, I think that's why it's so important to me, right? Because I would run around all the time just trying to be understood when I wasn't even communicating in the way that was most effective for that person to understand. And so, you know, as I invest more in my daughters and really seek to understand where they're coming from, right? They're raised totally different now with the cell phones in the hands and constantly doing this. And I'm like, well, why can't you just call, you know, this little black box calls people. You could like talk to them. And but guess what? That's not it for them. And so I've got to realize as a leader that, okay, if that's the way you like to communicate most effective, then maybe I should get out of my own head and not expect you to do what we did in the 80s. And I'll do what y'all do in the 2000s, you know, like, and that's character development. That's leadership development, is modifying your approach to fit who you're leading. That's everything to me anyway.
Yeah. And that trait right there, seek first to understand, be understood. That's your friend for life with that relationship, making it as strong as you can, whatever that means for any of us. And, you know, even with Eric, he don't talk a lot today. He don't call me a lot. He's living his own life. And sometimes I think he just don't care. but then out of the blue, he'll call me and want all kinds of advice and call Rhea and we'll talk. We'll talk like we've been talking every day of every week, like there's no gap in between. But, you know, as a parent wanting into that closer relationship, that's what I learned through going through all this. I got to give him that space. It's his life. He gets to decide how to live it. One day he may want to be close like I want to be, and maybe he don't. I mean, I wasn't close with people for a long time in my life. But that's it. You know, I don't blame him. I don't hound him. I don't even send him a lot of texts. I don't call him. I reach out every now and then. I kind of let him guide the relationship. That's so hard when I want to guide it. But that's what got me so much trouble before, was I tried to force myself into his life. So I know that he don't hate me. He loves me. And we talk, whenever we do talk, it's like I'm talking to you right now. It's like there ain't nothing between us that's separating us. Just he's on his path. I'm on mine. We're two different people. And he wants to live his own life. He's told me before, sometimes he don't want my influence, not because it's bad or whatever, but he wants his life to be based on his choices, not my influence. So a lot of times he don't share stuff on purpose. So a lot of parents, though, they can't get across that hurdle right there, and they want to keep treating them like they're 10 years old when they're 20, 30, and 40 years old. And that's what I'm telling you, I know from experience, those parents gonna get some zero relationship, zero influence. And that ain't where you want to be.
Yeah. But let me ask, can I ask you a question? I know you're asking questions. Can I ask you a question though?
Okay. I'll try to keep it short. You know, my answers ain't short, but this is about you, but I'll try to give a short answer.
Well, I'm just curious in a role reversal, right? Where maybe the parent doesn't really engage or want the relationship, but maybe the child does. I mean, is it the same rule? Would you call it the same rule? What's your take on from that perspective?
From the child's perspective in that scenario, or the parent?
Yeah, the child's perspective.
So the child wants the relationship with the parent.
Yeah,
yes, sir. I got that too. Okay. I'm all screwed up. I got both sides.
That makes two of us. Yes, sir.
I'm all screwed up, but I'm better now. but that relationship would be with my dad. You know, I always say I wish I could have the relationship like most people. It ain't most people though. It's not the norm to have great relationships. I figured that out. We just think it is. Most people don't have great relationships. When you come across that, what we would call a perfect family, that they just love and respect each other and care about each other and they're just tight. I don't see that much, but we call that normal, but that ain't normal, especially in the blue collar world. What I've learned is most of us got some dysfunctional families, all 360 degrees throughout the family. But no, for me, and it's different because I've learned so much. I could have the relationship that I want with my father if I want to lower my values to his, and that ain't going to happen. I ain't going to lower my values to his values so that I can have a relationship with him, because I value these values too much. I value them more than being in that relationship. You know, he's done things, talk about trust that's damaged that relationship. And I forgive him. I don't blame him. If you would have talked to me years ago before I dove into all this type of content, you would have felt and you would have saw that I hated him. And I would have told you that. Today, I just don't talk to him. But I could. That door is wide open, I'm sure, without a doubt. And I've forgiven him for all the things he's did. And it ain't just to me. It's to my mother and, you know, other people. Just his character. I don't associate with people like that. And I may be wrong still. I don't know. But for me personally, it's got nothing to do with the people I associate with. Got nothing to do with blood. It's about their character. And it's a hard thing. You know, I hadn't really had a relationship with him for quite a lot of years. And he got divorced, him and my mom, when I was 25. And that was ugly. And the way he treated her was why I really hated him and stopped dealing with him. And then, you know, later he had an issue, or she got married and got divorced again, and there was an issue between him and her that was instigated by him. And I when I started learning this, I had given him a chance. I took this stuff, I learned it, I rebuilt the relationship, and he read some of these books. He read Seven Habits. He was curious what caused me to change and give him another chance, but it didn't stick with him. You know, I think he used it to manipulate a little bit better other people. He learned some new tricks in being a manipulator. I would describe him, I'm not a doctor, I'd describe him as a narcissist. He's really focused on himself. And I used to be, I tell people I'm a recovering narcissistic sociopath. I guarantee you, if I went to a psychologist, that's what they would tell me, because the difference between sociopath and psychopath can't care about people. Something wrong in their brain. They can't really empathize and care and see it from another person's perspective. They can't help it. They just the way they wired, like a blind person can't see. They just can't see. But a sociopath, and I used to be that person. I didn't care about anybody. If I did care about somebody, it was because somehow they were going to help me. It was all about me. That's what made me be a narcissist. And most narcissists don't recover from that stuff. They remain a narcissist their whole life. I watch a lot of that stuff on YouTube, different doctors and stuff. So that's the Marines kind of made me that way. And then also, you know, my uncle that I looked up to kind of made me that way. So, but it's a choice. It's a choice. And,
Well, I'd love for you to send me some of the YouTube videos maybe that impacted you the most. That's something I'm looking into right now for myself. So that could help me like substantially. That I would be very grateful for that.
Okay, that's good. I'll send you some of the folks I watch. There's some doctors on there. They talk about it from a narcissism in the workplace too. I sent that a couple of videos to a client recently, because all these dictatorial, terrible leaders that we see out in, whether it's white collar or blue collar, they're everywhere. Majority of them are narcissists, and a majority of them are never going to change. That's why they want control. That's why the bad leaders, they want command and control, because they're a narcissist. That's what they feed off of. And they're usually the toxic people. Not always are they narcissists, but most often they are. And a lot of times they're sociopath. But narcissism, I don't know if you ever really truly recover. But I've come a long way from who I used to be. Most of them don't move because it's about them. They don't want to move. Everybody else is wrong. The world revolves around me. So that's, you know, when I was in college, I took psychology classes as all of my electives, because see, leadership is just a influence, the psychology of a human influence. When you're talking about trust, authentic influence, trust is the foundation of authentic influence. So I don't want to get too deep, man, talking the whole time I'm interviewing you, but call me sometime.
I appreciate it.
We can talk about this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. I need to call you more. I will absolutely take you up on that.
Did I answer though the specific question you had? Because I don't. I might have talked around it.
Yeah, I think so. I think you gave me an example. Maybe the next call we can get a little bit deeper and I can ask you some more pointed questions. But I think you painted a broad brush picture of what I was after. Yes, sir.
Yeah, ultimately, and this applies everywhere, every direction, 360 degrees. Regardless of who the people are in our lives or outside of our life, we got to decide who we are and what we value, and we got to align behind those values. You know, and that's why leadership is so simple, because it's influence, but it's so complex because all of us are different. Every time you add another person to the equation, it's much, much more complex every single time. And you're talking about building trust. If I want to go build trust with a criminal, guess what I got to be? A criminal. And in some places, we're going to have trust because we're criminals. But the other places, because we're criminals, we're not going to have trust. But if I want to hang out with authentic people, I can't be a criminal. So that's, you know, trust is based on shared values. It's all relative. You know, and right and wrong is relative. But everybody in life is trying to be happy.
Yeah, I hear you talking about you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with. I mean, I hear that coming out of your mouth right now.
There's only one reason you hang out with them five people, because you're like them. You don't hang out with the people you're not like, because you don't like them and you're not like them.
On that note, I need to get back to Greenville and stop hanging out with all these doctors here.
You got to be careful. Some of them know and some of them think they know.
But yeah, and that's very true. And I'll tell you, I've gravitated to some specific people here, and then come to find out, you know, next day we're talking again, and oh, that person built bridges for the first 15 years of their career. Yeah. This person, yeah, they were in construction. Like, and those are the people I've been gravitating and learning with here.
Yeah, they're the real deal. They know.
That authentic word comes right to mind. Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's the big piece. Tell me a little bit about your trust lesson. We got a few more minutes here. Well, tell me what's some of your key points on what you're talking about with the trust.
Yeah, so we're going to do this role playing opportunity where we get folks up out of the room. We'll call one a general contractor, one's a plumber, one's an electrical contractor, and we're going to put them all in this corner of the room where the actual construction is taking place. And then we're going to pull a few up, and one's going to be the owner. We're going to put them in this corner of the room, and then we're going to put the architect in the other corner of the room. And then we're going to sprinkle in maybe a specifier, a quality control person. And this is how jobs are oftentimes built, right? You've got the general contractor and the plumber and the electrical, and they're all contractors. Like, the people doing the work are all over there doing the work. But the people who are specifying and designing, they're all over here and they're spread out. And so there's gaps between those people. And so we're just identifying some of those gaps and how those affect the trust on the job site, right? When you see an architect come to the job and they're looking, if they're out there looking at your product and they're doing this, maybe they're taking pictures, the immediate thought is something's wrong. Like, what's wrong? What did I do? Like, this. And so that's a problem, right? That means that contractor doesn't trust that architect. Well, guess what? There's a good reason why the trust is absent there, because typically when the architect comes and takes pictures, something's wrong. Or even like down to the level of if I'm a general contractor supervisor on the job, and I walk out to the person doing the work and I'm like, hey, man, how you doing? Typically, if that's the first time I've done it, that worker looks at me like, what do you want? Like, what do you want from me? Why are you doing this? And that's a problem. And so there's a lot of these examples of trust gaps in construction that we need to work on. And the way we work on it is by doing it, right? Like inviting that architect to the job site, let them take the pictures because they're happy with the work and they want to go show it off. Or, you know, maybe I get that response the first day, but then I do it again the second day and the third day and the fourth day. And then by the fifth day, I go out there and that person's like, hey man, I'm doing great. This is what I got done this week. And you know, this is what I'm planning on doing. Like, and the conversation engages and then there's trust being built. And then when that person experiences a problem, they're going to bring that problem to you instead of trying to cover it up, right? If they broke somebody else's work, they're not going to deny it and, you know, run away from it or hide it. They're going to come to you and say, hey, I broke that person's work. I know you're not going to get mad, throw your hard hat and yell at me like you did 15 years ago, but you're actually going to take it in stride and get it fixed. And, you know, that's something that I've learned, again, these last 5 to 10 years. It's like my response to situations is conditioning people to either bring those situations to me or not. And so I got to be really, really careful about specifically when I receive like feedback that stings. Because if I respond in a way that I want to justify it or deny it or just call that person stupid, that person ain't bringing me no more feedback. And I got a lot of blind spots that I can't see around me. And I need that feedback in order to be a better human being. And so I want to be very careful how I respond to people so that they can continue to do things that I need in the long run, even when it hurts, especially when it hurts.
Yeah, I got another quote from Andy Stanley. And he says, you know, leaders who don't listen will soon find themselves surrounded by people with nothing to say. It's exactly what you just described. But but before you have to go, so everything you're talking about with trust, and it may or may not apply to this, but if it does, talk about it. Either way, I want you to talk about it. What's that old dog website that you sent, that link? Tell me, but what's that about? Does the stuff you do there help people build trust? Things like that. Tell us about that.
Oh yeah. I love it. Thank you for that. A gentleman named Buddy Brumley, a true old dog himself. He's 70 plus years old, been in the business for 40, 50 years. He's a general contractor superintendent down in Dallas, Texas. He and I got together and wrote a book called The Old Dog Lean Thesaurus. And basically, it was my response to these lean consultants, again, who come into job sites and they got all these tools and tips and tricks and things that are going to work. And they just start vomiting tools on people. And a lot of these builders, right? You call them blue collar. That's my word for blue collar is old dog. So if you think blue collar offends people, wait till they hear old dog.
I like that too.
Yeah. So what we did is I actually took the role of the lean geek, which I can't stand to this day. I defined there's 33 lean terms and they go in alphabetical order, except for the most important one, which is respect for people. We put that one first for obvious reasons, because the other ones don't work if you don't have that one first. And so what we did is we defined these lean terms like old or buffer or last planner system, or like, again, all the A3s, Kaizen, like all these words that people like to toss around. And we defined them from two perspectives. One was that lean geek consultant that knows everything. And then the other one was from an old dog perspective. And what we found while writing that book is it don't matter what we call it. As long as we're doing it and we're engaging and we're trying to make the workplace better because we care about the people doing the work, that's where it all comes from. And so, yeah, folks can go hit that olddogleanthesaurus.com. And we have biweekly peer group meetings where we bring about 20 superintendents together from across the nation. You know, companies like Turner and Skanska and DPR, Skiles Group, O'Shea Builders. There are some fantastic people from some amazing companies. And we all come together and we talk about lean construction and how we're using, you know, some of these lean things on projects, whether it's onboarding or scheduling, planning, and visualization, like we share secrets across company lines. And we have just, I mean, we have, you talk about a level of trust in that group that is uncanny. I mean, we got folks giving their secret sauce on those calls. And so we invite all newcomers, like, come on, like, if you want to learn about how to build better, how to build in this day and age, there's no better way to learn from somebody who's been doing it for 30 or 40 years. And they're just willing to come out there. And, you know, every other week we submit some topics, we'll all vote on the topics. So it, you know, bring any question. It doesn't have to be lean. Doesn't even have to be construction. We got lots of years of experience in that room who are all willing to be open and vulnerable and just transparent leaders. And so, yeah, we would invite everybody to come out. And if you want to feel what a trusting environment is like, that's the space without question.
That's awesome. That's some good stuff right there. So I hope the viewers or the listeners go check that out. And you're doing some good stuff, Adam, and I appreciate it. And so olddogleanthesaurus.com. If you're watching the video, it's obvious, it's right there on the screen. If not, you got to write that down. If you listen to the podcast, maybe you got to rewind it and check that out. So, Adam, go ahead.
Real quick, if you're listening, dog is spelled D-A-W-G, not D-O-G.
that's a good point right there. Good stuff. So I can tell you've done that before, Adam.
Yes, sir.
So I know you got to go. Have you ever read my Blue Collar Kaizen book?
I have not. I will be investing, though.
Well, you ain't got to invest because I'm going to send it to you for being on this podcast. Or that's if that's all right with you or any of our other books. You can preview our books at bluecollarleadership.com/download. And anyone you want, you know, I'll send you that book. All the folks who are from the U.S., you know, I'm sending them a book. And do you want that Blue Collar Kaizen book or you want to check around?
Yeah. No, okay. I would love that. I'll get it. I've already got a couple of the other ones. That Blue Collar Kaizen sounds right up my alley, because if we're trying to, you know, go out there and make a difference for the people doing the work because we care about them, there's no better tool than that Kaizen, or as Jesse calls a similar process, he calls it sweat equity improvement. And so absolutely, I'd be very grateful for that.
So text me your mailing address when you get an opportunity. And that book's nothing about the tools, though. It's all about respect for people from cover to cover. That's all it's about. So I really appreciate you sharing your time. I know you about to fly like Superman somewhere, so you can go have that fun and do what you were talking about. I wish I could see that. That's pretty cool. And anyway,
I'll get some video for you. How's that sound?
Yeah, get some video of you changing out your wardrobe there and making it happen. That sounds really, really cool. Maybe they video the whole thing for you and you'll have that somewhere. You got anything else before we wrap up?
Man, just thank you. Thank you to you. Thank you to Miss Rhea, who I know is behind the scenes keeping us straight. And yeah, like her book, Ladder of Influence, I've got that and I am loving it. It's something really, really special. So yeah, congrats to y'all. I will just add this. The lunch that we had with y'all at the barbecue place between my wife and I was very magical to just see y'all in action and living it, doing it, working together, living together, like, and you're still making it. Man, that's really, really special to us. And y'all had a huge, profound impact on our relationship. So much that I've recently walked away from some of my traveling that I've been doing, and I'm going to be at home a lot more. And I won't say that's all because of you, but y'all have had a tremendous, profound impact on our relationship. And I'm like just super, super grateful for that and would love to, you know, have lunch with y'all, return the favor, just however we can meet again in the future. I earn for that and would very much value and appreciate that. So thank you to you and Miss Rhea, who I know is over there listening to us. Hopefully she's smiling right now, but y'all are doing more than just blue collar leadership things. and this world is better because of it. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, man. And we'll make all that happen. So for the listeners, I appreciate you guys tuning in today. Share this episode. If you found value in what Adam had to share, share it out with the world, help people know who he is and what he does and why he does it and all that sort of stuff. So that's it for today. Talk to you next time.
Make it happen or someone else will. It might as well be you. Are you serious about taking your career and your life to the next level and beyond? Check out Max Story's Blue Collar Leadership Series books and others, now available on audio, along with paperback and ebooks at Amazon, iTunes, and Audible. Please visit BlueCollarLeadership.com to learn about Max's books, programs, special offers, certifications, and more. Thank you for listening to the Blue Collar Leadership Podcast.